This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
So this is a special episode of the Book Riot Podcast, which is a news and weekly talk show about what's new, cool, and we're talking about in the world of books and reading. And this is sort of that. It's like not new and cool for this week, but we normally and will do, and coming soon, will be our regular two-part holiday recommendation show. And I guess if you're listening to this on Thursday, you still could get by the strike of midnight new recommendation requests in for the night of the 17th. But today we're doing, I'm thinking of the RSTLNE of holiday recommendations for new books that came out this year, where we're going to pick some that are kind of good, maybe not general purpose for anyone, Rebecca, but the different part of the Swiss Army knife does different things. How about that? And we're, you know, this, we got the little corkscrew on here, we got the little scissors, we got the nail file. And, you know, they're not perfect of themselves, but you're trying to get something that generally will work in a couple different categories. We're just kind of thinking of books that would be good gifts for different kinds of readers. We're going to each pick five, which means we'll talk about probably 10 each because we'll smuggle some other ones in there and you know, get piggyback some in there. But Rebecca, this is a little bit different than our holiday rec show in this regard, which is we're not responding to specific requests, and we're keeping it to 2022 titles. I don't know why we're doing this. Maybe it's just for fun to kind of highlight the year in reading to some degree.
Yeah, it is just for fun. We needed to do an extra holiday themed episode in the feed this year for advertiser demand issues, which we are happy to have. And as I was thinking about, okay, well, we already do custom personalized recommendations on our show. We also then will do an episode later in the year about our favorite books of 2022. We might even do, you know, some other stuff. We do like best of the rest, which is all the stuff that we like this year that wasn't books. And so I just started thinking, like, well, what else haven't we hit? And it was that sort of general purpose, not one book to rule them all, but just good books that came out this year that you need to give a book to somebody. What is, and you know a little bit about that person at least. It's not like the broad Swiss Army that we talk about where you can buy this and give it to almost anybody. It is, I like your comparison there of like, actually, this is the corkscrew here. This is the little knife. There's a couple different kinds of readers that you might be trying to buy for. And these are, I think, going to be safe and likely successful selections for most people that you might be buying a book for this year.
Yeah. So I got a little bit of everything. I got a few different things. And I kind of have an ideal reader in mind for a lot of these. And then that, I think I'm generalizing out to, this is a kind of reader or a kind of interest. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how you're going. We haven't discussed our picks ahead of time. We do not have the same ideal readers in mind at all. So we're going to be just badmintoning back and forth as we go. Where do you want to start? How would you like to begin?
Where would I like to start?
Do you have a number one overall draft pick? Is there a gift book of the year?
Oh, I don't have a gift book of the year. No. Do you?
I was trying to think, put another way, what book will be under the most trees, if that makes sense? What will be gifted the most? Having a hard time. Was it Brené Brown new this year? I didn't actually look at this for myself.
I think Atlas of the Heart was last year.
Okay. The new Michelle Obama book came out today. That's an interesting contender.
I had that as one of my possibilities for today, the new Michelle Obama, The Light We Carry. I think that might be under a lot of trees. Certainly Becoming was under a lot of trees and given for as a lot of, you know, Hanukkah gifts and other winter holidays that folks are celebrating. I don't know. There hasn't been like, other than like Colleen Hoover, there has not been like a big novel of the year that folks are, that everybody's talking about and that's like widely appealing. It's not like the year of,
I'm glad my mom died, which is one of the books of the year, is a tough gift at the family Christmas tree.
I'm listening to that right now and I was having that thought of like, I can think of people I would give this to, but like you can only give that to somebody when like, you know what they've talked about in therapy.
Right. Yeah, maybe give it to your sister. I don't know. Your mileage may vary. The all-time great Your Mileage May Vary title.
You just subtly face that out on your bookshelf right before your parents come for the holidays. That's a tough one. That's a tough hang.
I think one of the other books of the year, and we're going to do, a Patreon episode. Is that a Patreon that we have on the docket for books of the year, or is that a regular episode? Do you know off the top?
We're doing, that'll be a Patreon episode about what were the books of 2022.
Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So This Could Be Us is an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on the Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
But to tip my hand a little bit, I think Babel is one of those, but I'm not sure it's a great gift book for reasons I'll talk about. It's a big ask. So that's another one. I agree. Maybe the Michelle Obama. Outside of that, are people gifting each other Colleen Hoovers? I guess they must be. Bayesian Prior, is that the books people are buying the most?
Yeah, I would assume so. It's kind of surprising to me that there are still people in the world who want to read the Colleen Hoover but have not read it yet, but we saw that arc happen with Crawdads. Would assume, and she's got so many titles that I assume a lot of Colleen Hoover books are going to be given as books, as gifts this year, even if it's not, you know, the big titles. Maybe I'll start with the one that I can imagine giving to the most people on my list.
That's a good way of thinking about it. I like that.
Yeah, and I think it's extensible for probably folks listening to this show in our general demographic varieties. I think The 90s by Chuck Klosterman.
It's on my list, too.
Yeah, it's, popular history with a kind of philosophy bent about stuff that if you are a mid to elder millennial or older, you lived through and have some memory of. But like, I was, 8 years old-ish when Ross Perot was running for president, and I had no real sense of actually how disruptive that was, really what it meant in culture. Chuck Klosterman contextualizing that for me in his particular way was really interesting, along with all of the other stuff that he talks about. And I think it's one of those, it's a fun thing to read about. We have a lot of nostalgia culturally for the 90s in this moment right now, 30 years out from it. And I see a lot of that, at least in my demographic, my group of friends. I can imagine giving this to like some folks a little bit older than me who would have had a deeper memory and experience of the stuff that happened in the 90s. It feels like it's pretty widely applicable. It's pretty safe. Klosterman is interesting, but not like it's not really political. It's not super challenging. Like, you can tell where he's coming from. There's a real perspective to it. But there's not a lot of, argumentation happening there. There's not, I don't think, a lot that too many people would object to, or even if you have some pieces you object to, on the whole, it's like, here, look at what happened 30 years ago, and let's understand it now that we have some distance. And it's just a really fun read. He's a great writer. Super fun.
He's a great writer. It's also wonderful on audio. Mm. He's a great narrator. He sounds like Chuck Klosterman. If you've never heard him, I'd be curious if people have listened to it or haven't, would even just try this sample to see. Audiobooks are hard to gift. I don't know what,
that's,
I mean,
true.
You know, there's not a, you can wrap something up, I guess, if you want to do that, but also just something to know. Weirdly, the Good Choice Reads Award, that's not anything. That's
Good
just
Reads Choice
it in,
Awards?
Yes. The long list came out yesterday and I was perusing it, and the 90s appears under humor, which is weird.
That is weird.
I would say it's wry more than it's funny, but
and it's a nonfiction book.
Well, a lot of humor is nonfiction, well, but they're like essays. I thought that was strange.
I think it's more, it's not academic, but Klosterman leans closer to academic than to humor. And I think I would have just put it in like general nonfiction or history or whatever.
It's like more cultural criticism,
yeah,
right? The nonfiction categories on the Goodreads Choice Award leave something to be desired, because nonfiction, there's more fiction categories than nonfiction. And let's just, I'll say this, BookRite itself can be guilty of this in our bespoke products. We have a nonfiction newsletter and a nonfiction podcast. Go check them out if you like that. But that's an unruly group to put in, so I don't really know where to. Mine that I think, I'll stay on nonfiction too, and there might be some cross-contamination. Maybe we'll agree with ourselves for our holiday recommendation show that we won't recommend titles that we put on this list, or at least mention that we already, they cannot be our only pick, let's put it this way. But I think in the same vein, if you're a little more philosophically, academically oriented than wanting to know about the 90s, I think How to Be Perfect by Michael Schur is a really good Swiss Army gift for someone who wants to have a reading experience that's pleasurable. Edutainment to the max, I guess, is what I'm going for with How to Be Perfect. And the 90s, too. I think How to Be Perfect is more fun than the 90s because of...
I agree.
He's a comic writer. Weirdly, it would make more sense for me to, for How to Be Perfect to be in the humor category than the 90s by Klosterman. If you didn't hear us talk about this before, Michael Schur is the showrunner for A Good Place, also involved in Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Was it during COVID or right after COVID? I can't remember. Got interested in basically moral philosophy and teaches himself and explores moral philosophy. And it's one, he takes several of the most enduring questions of moral philosophy and then rings them through different schools of thought in this urbane, down to earth, humble yet confident alchemy that he does in this book that's still hard to describe, infuriatingly perfectly wrought for a certain kind of tonality. It's fun. It's wonderful on audio. He gets some of the Good Place actors to come play some different characters or different positionalities that pop up again and again. Just a really fun book. It'd be good for, you've got a college student, you've got someone who's new out in the world, you know, trying to figure out their lives. You've got dads, you got mom. I mean, there's a world in which it hits a lot of quadrants, right? So How to Be Perfect, I think, by Michael Schur. I've recommended a bunch myself this year. I think it's probably my most recommended nonfiction pick in my real life, I would say. 90s is close, but I think what the thing about How to Be Perfect, I can go a generation up from me and feel pretty good about this. With the 90s, I'm a little less sure at this point.
It's a great pick. How to Be Perfect is a really great pick, and he does... It's so much harder to be funny about moral philosophy than it is to be funny about almost anything else. Like, just to make a false dichotomy between the 90s and How to Be Perfect. A lot of stuff that happened in the 90s is inherently like amusing, weird, absurd. Looks funny from 30 years later, was kind of funny at the time, all that angst, you know, and Klosterman comments on all of that. But Schur is able to take like the biggest questions that we have in life about what does it mean to be a good person? How do you make difficult decisions? And how do you reconcile all of these different frameworks, none of which are perfect themselves, in a way that is, it's so accessible and it's warm and it's not judgy. I really loved that about it, that it's like, here, you're going to make some tough calls and there are like a billion different ways that you could navigate making those tough calls. Here are some frameworks. BT dubs, none of them are foolproof either. So good luck out there.
Like, right.
It's a
you
really
thought
good
you
pick.
Know what you do in the trolley problem, but do you?
Yeah. That's a really good pick. I was kind of going back and forth on whether or not Inciting Joy by Ross Gay, which we just rhapsodized about last week.
You know, I had the same equivocation. Let's talk about it.
Well, I think it's for a similar kind of reader to How to Be Perfect, but it's a subset of those. Like, we're all, I think, to some degree interested in what does it mean to be a good person? How do I make these decisions in my life? And Gay's writing is like, it's just headier, and not in an academic way, but it is just headier. Dude's a poet, right. You know? And so like a poet meditating on how to find joy by communing in our sorrow and like building solidarity. There is a really big subset of people in my life I would gift this to, but it's a subset of the broader folks I could give the 90s or How to Be Perfect to. I think you need to know someone to give them Inciting Joy, where like if you found out you needed to, I don't know, buy a book for your hairstylist and you knew a few things about them, you could pick either the 90s or How to Be Perfect or some of these other ones and go there. But you need to like, I think a personal understanding of where a person is sitting in kind of their philosophical approach to life, spiritual practices, maybe even. Inciting Joy walks that line in a way that's hard to give someone that you don't know really well.
It is slightly up the intellectual literary ladder. Mm-hmm. And maybe more than several notches above, but it's still accessible in its own way. But you're not going to Swiss Army wreck it. I just don't think you can. Yeah. You're right. You have to know. If you know a little bit, if they are a little more poetical of a soul, a little more into the bittersweetness and complexity of life and wallowing around in that, wallow is not, reveling and wallowing are different, meaningfully, but slightly different shades are important. I would, here's the thing. That's the book I would be most excited to recommend to someone if I felt that was a good recommendation for them. Is that interesting?
Yeah, I think that is interesting. And I have felt that way. I got to recommend it to a friend in person last week, and it was exciting. Like, he said a thing that I was like, oh, yeah, you need to read this Ross Gay book. And we had a whole moment like at live as it was happening, and he was downloading the audiobook while we were talking about it. I was like, this is, it's that really good feeling of like, I just made a spot on book recommendation for this person. They're really going to like it. And I think for those like folks in your life that might in different language be referred to as like seekers, or who are looking for like some spiritual lens for understanding what they're doing on earth that isn't like, you know, a meditation practice or yoga or some religious structure or framework, but just a vibe that they can bring to how they think about their life. Inciting Joy, it would be a great pick. But yeah, it is not one of the tiny tools on the Swiss Army knife, I don't believe.
It's interesting because I don't think you can, weirdly, it feels like it should be in, you can recommend it to someone who's like, oh, I love Atlas of the Heart, right? That's the normie version. Mm-hmm. But you cannot just be like, you liked Atlas of the Heart, you did this. You almost need someone who's a little dissatisfied by Atlas. If you were interested in Atlas of the Heart and found it a little dissatisfying, that would be an Inciting Joy opening to me, right? Because it just does.
Right. Yeah.
It's just adding a little more complexity and flavor.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I guess one that is in the category, like there's a category of people that like inspirational life-affirming books, but this is like a little bit of Inciting Joy is a little bit of curveball. There's a lot of people that like to give and get books about food around the holiday time. This one is, again, I don't know that's general purpose, but if you have the right person, Kosher Soul by Michael Twitty, which is Faith and Food Journey of an African-American Jew. This is a wonderful book. He's a cook, but also a poet at heart. This is about the intersection of, it's there in the title. I think this is an awesome book. If you're looking to give a cookbook or food book to someone, who's interested in intersectionality of any kind, that's an obvious pick. But I also think you could use this to push someone's boundaries a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to them to say, you know, maybe you don't need the sixth Ina Garten book, you know, maybe five is enough. I think this is a really cool book. And I don't know. I don't think this sold very well, which I think is a damn shame. Mm-hmm. So there's another thing I'm saying. He also wrote The Cooking Gene, which is really good. I tend to like, I don't buy cookbooks. And this one, I can't even, I did this on audio, so it's kind of hard to say. Were there a bunch of recipes in this? I don't even remember.
Mm. I'll have to flip through it. I don't remember either.
I don't think there are a lot. So it's less of a cook. It's certainly, for me, it's less of a cookbook. I don't care about that myself. So anyway, if someone's interested in food, this is really cool. This is the kind of book I'm so glad to see, and frankly, kind of what I need from a food mm-hmm. narrative, or I'm not narrative, but prose food book. I need a little something I haven't read before, and this is just a wonderful book. I'm so yeah. glad it exists.
I have to, I really second the emotion of that pick. That is a great gift selection, and I second the emotion of why wasn't this book a bigger deal?
Yeah. Like,
I was visiting a friend in Vermont and shopping at the wonderful Northshire bookstore in Manchester, and I like, it's become my habit on this trip at that bookstore with the people that I'm with on at that when I'm doing this trip with those people, I go to this bookstore. I usually like wander around and I almost always buy stuff from their food section. They have a wonderful, like pretty big food and food writing mm-hmm. section. And I picked up Kosher Soul. I had not heard it was out. And like, I am the target audience for Kosher Soul by Michael Twitty.
Yeah.
So I picked it up then and I was so delighted. But yes, read it, buy it, gift it. He should be more famous. It's wonderful. As much as I wish I could put Song of the Cell on this list.
I know, right? Can't do
you,
it.
You can't do it. It. The big cellular biology book is not broadly giftable.
Yeah.
But in the science-y world, I think for the like the nature nerds, the science nerds, An Immense World by Ed Yong is yeah. That's a good pick.
It is good.
Yeah. Animal lovers, it's stuff that I think you could either read sections or pull out like good tidbits with your kids. I wouldn't give the book to a kid, but it has sort of family crossover, or since we're talking about audiobooks a lot here too, a very safe and interesting family audiobook experience, I think.
Audiobook.
But I've got some folks in mind, like if I got a particular brother-in-law in the family gift exchange this year, it would be An Immense World for sure for him.
I also was trying to think of a science-adjacent fun gift book. And I'm going to go back to The Well, because Randall Munroe keeps helping me out in publishing interesting books in this. And What If 2 came out this year, Additional Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions, a sequel to What If. Mm-hmm. I bought this immediately and put it on my coffee table. This is a hot tip for those of you with kids, if this is interesting. What I like to do is buy interesting reference nonfictioning books and then set them out.
I love this.
And they pick them up. Ames and his friend was over there and they just picked up What If 2 and they had a great time reading it together. They didn't really know what it was. The cover does the thing you need it to do, which is had a dinosaur trying to eat a plane. And that's immediately like, what is going on there? And that's the kind of thing like, could a T-Rex take down a plane? They're fun. They're smart. They're snackable. Like you can pick it up and read it just for a few minutes and flip through it. And I think it's for the curious, but also the scientifically curious. You've got engineers, architects, software developers, anyone that has an especial interest in the way the world works from a science or practical point of view. This is a lot of fun. So What If 2 by Randall Munroe is a really fun... It just also... I don't know how that we solve for this when we're thinking about books, but sometimes you want to solve for the Christmas morning utility mm-hmm, of something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that people could pick up and like look at together on Christmas morning for a few minutes and read out loud to each other and look at this one. I think that's a lot of fun. I think there's value in that. So there's another piece of it that it can be a communal experience for someone as well. Even if you have a big family gathering and you're sitting around or it's kind of a nice in the moment book to have on hand for a Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa kind of celebration, whatever you might have a gifting mm-hmm. situation in your life. So that's What If 2 by Randall Munroe. Yeah.
I suspected that was going to be on your list, so I just didn't put it on mine. But super fun. There are kids in my life who are going to get that book this holiday season, 100%. I want to do a broad This is a really broadly appealing cookbook for somebody who is either just starting off or has a lot of experience and everything in between. King Arthur Baking put out a new cookbook just earlier this fall called Baking School, and it is wonderful. It's a huge kind of omnibus of like, here's how to make muffins. Here's how to make breads. Here's how to make pastries. Here's different kinds of cakes. And each section has sort of like the basics that you need to know about those things. Some common technique stuff. So the book does not assume that you know what all the techniques are. It won't be like that, you know, episode of Schitt's Creek where they're like, fold it in, just fold in the cheese, and they don't know what it means to fold something in. This book explains to you what it is to fold a thing, what it means to like whip something until it has stiff peaks, all that kind of stuff. And the recipes are wonderful. There's like no more reliable source for baking recipes than the King Arthur Baking website, in my personal opinion. And it's a really terrific cookbook that if you've got somebody who loves to bake, they will find new stuff that they haven't tried in here. If you have somebody who's just starting to explore it, it's a really good starter. It's kind of the baking version of The Joy of Cooking, I think, or it's positioned to be that, where you can learn a whole bunch of stuff or pick up your skills and take them to the next level wherever you are. But it's, you know, cookbooks make great gifts, but it can be really hard, again, unless you know like what the person likes to cook and what their skill level is. But I would feel pretty good giving Baking School from King Arthur Baking to just about anybody.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to go practical tip too. I'm not sure this is a perfect book. High bar. Very few are. That's the Midwestern me saying. There could be a better version of this book, but I don't think a better version of book of this exists. So okay. This is what I'm going to recommend. This might be better as a recommendation, and it's going to go in my file for Moms, Dads, and Grad Season. And I don't think I talked to you about this. Did you happen to come across Building a Second Brain by Tiago Forte in your year at all? Have you heard of this one? So it's basically that part of David Allen where it's like you need a trusted system, right? It's like here... And it's the whole thing, but it's more talking digitally, how to do that digitally. I think this is good for someone. You've got a new, any kind of knowledge worker could think about this. How do you collect and organize the information you want to collect and organize in a digital way? Why it matters, how hard it is to do, why we shouldn't use our meat brains for remembering and organizing. Our meat brains are for thinking and analyzing, right? And we have lots of interesting ways, but to think, you know, and I read some of the other reviews of this and like, it could have been a blog post, and I was like, welcome to business books. I'm sorry. That's just usually how it could be. I kind of agree with that. But on the other hand, I'm coming around, hot take, as I previewed the other day, maybe I'm more in favor of the fluffed up blog post business book than I thought, because part of what the longer time spending with it means you have to dwell more in the questions and ideas that something is trying to. You could read a blog post that says you should take notes. Does that do the same thing as a chapter with examples and stats and everything else? I actually don't think it does, Rebecca. And there's various versions of this, but you hear what I'm saying about that?
Yeah.
Like, I think there is some time, like I'm kind of dedicating some time to dwelling with this question, even if this paragraph or this example is just one more in a pile of examples, but at least I'm spending some more time here. I think it's really good. I think it's very useful. Is it as life-changing as 4,000 weeks? No. Except that maybe it is, and you just don't realize it's not. You're not gonna have epiphany moments. Mm. But if you think about organizing your life differently, I know Getting Things Done by David Allen was important to you and I. I think both the book itself, but the way of thinking about our work and what we do and how to do things is really interesting. And this is kind of the. I almost wish this is two long chapters at the end of Getting Things Done. Maybe for me personally, then I have it all in one. But I think you've got someone going their first semester of college, they're going to university, or someone you know struggles with productivity, someone has a million tabs open all the time, you know who you are, get it for yourself. I think this is a good practical one. If you like someone in your life, they don't even have to like reading necessarily to like this kind of a book. Mm-hmm. And I know that we don't want to like make people read that don't want to read, but this is a different kind of use case of books. And I think someone would be very interested as a... We're all wrestling with this, right? Of where to put all this stuff and how to think about, how to make sense of this. Maybe you don't like the project-driven model as much as Tiago Forte does. And I think this makes a lot. Thinking about things you're doing in terms of projects makes a huge difference for me. The example I used put up the Christmas tree is not a task. Mm-hmm. That is a project, right? I got to go get the tree. I got to get the stand out. I got to move all the furniture around. I got to make sure there's a time when Michelle is around so she can help me. And then I got to make sure I'm going to water it. And like that's like a whole project. And you could put that as put up the Christmas tree, but it makes it easier to think of it as a project. You can break it down where you don't put that information. That's just one by itself. But I liked it. I wish there were more different ways of thinking about this, but this is the one. So that's the one I'm recommending. That's Building a Second Brain by Tiago Forte. I believe that's how you say the name. I couldn't find a pronunciation. There you go.
I like that. And I do think I agree with your hot take there for the most part about that kind of business or self-help book. Like most of these are things that could be summed up in a long article and you could know it intellectually then, but I do think the book gives you space to cross the gap from knowing it's true to feeling that it's true. And it's the feeling that it's true that I think moves us to do something differently, to change our behavior, update the mental model, and actually like start breaking out all the steps mm-hmm. that it takes to put the Christmas tree up. Or like the one in my life right now, very pressingly, is figure out Thanksgiving dinner.
Yes. How many people are coming? What are their dietary restrictions?
Exactly.
What time are we going to eat?
Right. And then like how many grocery trips and for which items and when is stuff going in the oven and how many things need to go in the oven? Do we have snacks? All those pieces. And having a model for that is super helpful. I will have to check that out. Interesting that most of this list, actually all of this list so far, is nonfiction.
Well, I'm saving my fiction for the end,
okay.
I guess. Just kind of how we...
Yeah, how we started.
We grew up a little bit. I guess let's pause on that. Do you think, in general, nonfiction is more giftable than fiction?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I think you're probably... And why is that?
There's so much like personal interest and taste and preference that goes into the fiction that people read, and... Like folks who read fiction or who read a ton of books, I think tend to veer towards mm-hmm. reading a lot of fiction. It can be a harder thing to guess. Have they read this or not? I think nonfiction is a little bit more of a straightforward, like, I know that you're interested in this thing. Here's a book about it. When I was
it's
starting
the socks of books. Everyone needs socks.
Right.
People like socks.
Yeah. These are fun socks. They're
a
useful.
A really great dress, if you get it right, is great, but it's hard to buy someone a dress for
yeah.
them. And I think fiction's a little bit more like that.
It's tough. Thinking about fiction for the year, I did land on, I think, a couple novels. Maybe I think the most giftable novel that I read this year, even though it did not end up being my favorite, but I do think it's widely giftable, is Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle
really?
Zevin.
Really? Traitor.
I
no, I kind of, I know what you're saying. I don't
well,
disagree
also,
with you. I didn't pick it, but
be,
I don't disagree with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we seem to be weirdos in our, we are in the minority opinion on that book. And we didn't, neither of us disliked it, but I think we landed in the place of being kind of whelmed by it. And there were a lot of folks just raving about it. It's on many of the best books of the year lists. So take all of that for what it's worth. But kind of a similar reader to the 90s reader for Klosterman, I think, but applicable to younger folks as well, because it's about video games, but it's really about making something, like what it feels like to be really invested in making something, whether that's, in their case, it's the two characters making a video game together. But if you've been super invested in a project or a job or some idea that you are trying to bring into fruition in the world, like, you can relate to these characters. I loved that for most of the book, it was a platonic relationship between male and female characters that had a business and creative partnership with each other. We don't get a lot of that. And it is really absorbing. Gabrielle Zevin's writing moves. The book went quickly. I've like sank right into it and felt the whole world. You and I both had quibbles about like some of the plot choices and some of the stuff that happens near the end. But I do think it's pretty widely giftable. My other one was Lessons in Chemistry, but that book, you got to give there's surprise rape in that book.
Yeah. We got to talk. We're going to talk about it on the regular show because a news came out about, I'm not going to spoil, I don't want to mess up the shows. We don't know how to do bonus episodes because we're going to start talking about things that get taken off the agenda. Yeah, I can see, I would have made this, between the two, I definitely would pick Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. We both said it, and we did a special, was that a Patreon episode or was that
a segment? Yes, that was a Patreon episode.
We both did start by saying we sank into this and blew through it. Mm-hmm. And I think from a gifting point of view, that's job one.
Yep.
is that the turning the pages is not going to be anything like a chore to do, because that's like giving someone a mind pet is to give them a book that's going to be a chore. That's not what you want.
Right.
You gotta feed that dog. You gotta take that dog out. You don't give people dogs for gifts. And you don't give people To Paradise by Hanya Yamazahara as much as I want. Might want to, but I'm not going to do it because I'm a human and I know things about other people and how they work. So I think I'm going to go slightly snobbier with my general fiction pick, because I find myself, this is the kind of book I'm going to recommend most, because a lot of people that ask me personally for recommendations, I think they're coming to me because they want something that a former English professor is going to recommend to them.
That's fair.
I think. Mm-hmm. But I also don't want to make it a slog. So I think Sea of Tranquility is the first club I'm pulling out of my bag.
It's a good one.
Year. I think that's what people are looking for when they're asking me for a recommendation. Now, again, depending on who you're buying for, are they a former English minor? You know, that kind of thing? That's Sea of Tranquility. If they kind of are a more general reader, I think you go to Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. You could even go more general than that, maybe even Mystery Thriller, which is going to be my last pick here in a minute, or I'm going to smuggle two in at the end. I'm sorry. to do. But Sea of Tranquility, here's the thing. It's pretty short. It's enveloping. It has not a puzzle element, but the way the pieces fit together are extremely satisfying for a certain kind of mind. Mm-hmm. And I'll put mine in there. And it's beautifully written. And it's going to be made into something, and that person's going to be able to say in 3 years, oh, I read that book.
Yeah.
Which everyone likes to do that, especially kind of a more lay of a reader. So, and it's good. And maybe that's the thing. It's good. I haven't gotten into this yet. If I'm going to do my 10 favorite novels of the year, it's in the conversation at least. Mm-hmm. What I am looking for a novel to do is not necessarily what Sea of Tranquility does, but it does what it does so well, but I can't help but like it.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, my other like kind of contender for a big fiction, but this is a big book and it's hard to gift somebody a 500-page book, but I really think there are great readers for Small World by Jonathan Evison, and it has that same thing that you were talking about from Sea of Tranquility, where a bunch of threads come together and the pieces click in a really satisfying way. So that didn't make my, this is my top five, but there are readers in my life that would be the book for, and it touches on big questions about America's history, big problems with America's history and how the country was founded. It has a little bit of a political angle, but feels like it felt to me like an artist doing the things we want artists to do with those questions of showing the story and letting it speak for itself. It wasn't like a big bang you over the head with its political perspective novel. Mm-hmm. I think that's a contender. Can I sneak one last one in? I think I've done.
Yeah, I got it. I might have one last category. I'm not going to pick one thing.
Okay. Yeah. What's your one last category?
Well, a lot of people like to read mystery and thrillers. And you know, a lot of people of us have people in our life that read mystery and thrillers, and they tend to read a lot of them, but they also appreciate them. And mystery and thriller writers, like most people, aren't maybe as up on front list. So you can recommend something relatively new, and there's a fairly good chance they haven't gotten it for them. So that's my last category. So you go first, and I'll do mine.
Okay. My last one is Left on 10th by Delia Ephron. For everyone.
Really? So I think that's a tough hang. Talk to me about how you got yourself there.
Well, I didn't find it to be a tough hang. I thought it was so lovely.
You mean all the almost dying and please murder me because I'm in so much pain? That wasn't tough for you? God, you're a tough lady. I knew that, but boy.
Well, it's not like when breath becomes air. I don't know.
A high bar, Rebecca. That's like, well, it's not Schindler's List. Okay, great.
So for those who didn't listen to us rhapsodize about Left on 10th for all of the first quarter of the year, it's Delia Ephron's memoir about falling in love later in life. That her first partner had died. Is that right? And she
lifelong love. Wonderful. Yes, everything's great.
Wonderful relationship. Ends after decades when he passes away. She meets a man who is in a similar situation, and they have this surprise, really big, beautiful love story very late in life. And so it has the complications and difficulties that come with being a person in your late 70s or early 80s. There are health scares. There's all sorts of tangly. You got like 80 years of personal history to unwind and unpack with a person, and to unpack theirs and try to see them as this full human and understand them. But I thought it was just so affirming of like, yes, all of this is hard. Yes, I've watched one partner die and now I love this person and he may be dying as well, or maybe I will be dying. Maybe we will, one of us is going to die first, and that is very present at that age. But the way that she just looks at it and is like, yes, this is true. We will be facing this. This is life. And all this big experience, this big, beautiful love is worth that pain. You're going to have the pain anyway, so you might as well, you know, have these big, wonderful experiences too. I wouldn't give it to everybody. Like, maybe I wouldn't give it to, I don't know, my mother-in-law who's approaching 80.
Talk about memento mori, baby. I mean, that's
a move. That would be a move like the person I'm still mad at 15 years later who gave me the year of magical thinking right before my wedding.
No, you can't. No. What are we doing?
You cannot
here?
Do that to people. But it's wonderful.
I like the book. I just don't know.
I think it's giftable.
And you could gift it the right person, yeah. But I'm falling more in towards the rec show where you need a little. I don't know, surface area to it. It's your pick. It's a wonderful book. I'm glad to have any reason to talk about it. But it is very sad. You didn't do an audio.
I did do it on audio. Yeah.
She's almost crying, Rebecca, when she says they're all going to die.
I mean, I don't know, Jeff. It was beautiful. Okay. I didn't find it to be sad. I found it to be really affirming.
Yeah, well, it's affirming and sad. That can be both things.
It's true.
Yeah. People like mystery thrillers. Here are the couple that I really liked. I'm going to do three. This is such cheating crap.
No one cares.
This was one of the IT books of the first quarter of the year. And I think this is one where I did go, God help me, look at the Goodreads reviews. And I'll tell you why. Because the main character in this book, it's called The Maid by Nita Prowse. If I haven't said it already, I can't remember. Is maybe neurodivergent, but it's not really talked about or named as such. Mm. But I think that's probably what it is. And this is not an area of expertise for me in terms of representation and experience. And it seems like there are some people, it goes back and forth about that. So that says something to know. But having said that, it was one of the first books I blew through at the beginning of the year. It was really interesting. It has a good mystery really kind of needs something unexpected to happen at some point. Like you kind of feel like you know what's happening and then it doesn't and something else does. It has that. And I thought it was good. And I think someone who likes mystery thrillers, again, if they have a lot of experience with neurodivergent people in their lives, maybe shy away from this because they may have a stronger flavor. Mm-hmm. From my point, from some people that I seem like they know what they're talking about, said that there's a way in which this is very interesting kind of a representation. It shouldn't be taken as everyone's experience, like anyone shouldn't. It's also a mystery thriller, and some stuff that wouldn't happen in real life does happen because that's a mystery thriller genre by itself. So with those caveats in mind, I think this would be a good day after Christmas, hot cup of cocoa, read it in one sitting kind of book. And that's kind of what I want to give if I'm giving mystery thrillers, frankly, this time of year. The other one I've mentioned before that's on that tip, Mouth to Mouth by Antoine Wilson. It's a great plain read, very suspenseful. I thought it was good. Just a razor sharp knife of a book that does a lot of what I wanted to want. And then if someone is ready for a little more, if you like a little more serial killer in the mix when it comes to your mystery thrillers, okay. Notes on an Execution, which was pretty amazing, I have to say. And that book got talked about a lot in the beginning of the year, but it's not talked about as much right now. And I don't know. It's by Dania Kukovka, I'm having a hard time with all those K's in a row with my Midwestern mouth. And this one, is it a mystery thriller? It's a serial killer, though you find out pretty soon what happened, but then how and why and how people deal with it. The thing that really struck me about this is that the victims are centered here. Like you get long chapters about the victims of this. And the killer himself gets their own POV, but you get the family members, you get their own experience with the people this happened to, you get the detectives, and the detective is a woman, and it feels like an evolved version of a book you've read before. And serial killers are interesting, and how they did it, and why they do it, but also really looking at, you know, who was the girl at the kitchen counter? What was her story? What was the long effect of this happening? I was pretty mesmerized by it. It disturbed. So having said that, you know, I'm recommending a book about serial killers just after giving you grief about Left on 10th. I realize the hypocrisy there. But if you realize the hypocrisy, Rebecca, you get away with it. Isn't that how it works? I think that's how it's supposed to work.
Jeff, I knew you were an insightful human, but now I really know.
Yeah, now you know. So that's Notes on an Execution. Again, if someone really doesn't mind, if they like creepy, disturbing, this is as creepy as disturbing as I can go. Let's put it that way. It looks like this was pretty popular, maybe more popular than The Maid. I'm just trying to get some sense of like how many people have read these books, which luckily we have all the sales data at our disposal at all times. So we can just directly
compare. Totally transparent and easy to interpret. Yeah.
So those are my picks. Oh, no, The Maid was way more popular. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Way more popular. So there you go. Those are my 5/8.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anything else you want to shout out? Anything you wish you had more? How about this? I'll throw this at you quickly. Anything you wish you had more occasions to recommend?
Ooh, that's a great question. Now, I feel like I got to find my reading list.
Yeah, list I know. Now we can do that. The one I was thinking about. Oh, go ahead. Did you have something come off the top of your mind?
No. Please vamp for me for a minute so I can contemplate.
We did get one recommendation request for someone who's like, I love To Paradise by Hanya Yanagihara, which
I saw that.
Let's go us. I wish I had more occasions to recommend To Paradise. I think it's underrated, as you know. It kind of has gotten lost in the year. I don't know who I need. I don't know who can tell me, what book can someone tell me they liked? I'm having a little hard time finding purchase to recommend it off of.
I wish, I think the small, weird, quiet novel is always something I wish
tough.
I could recommend more often. And this year it would be Joan Is Okay and The Swimmers. I wish that I could give that I had more reasons to give those.
We recommend them to ourselves, Rebecca. That's who we recommend those books to. One of us reads one of those, like, you know what? I found one.
That's why we have this.
I got one on the line, Shinsky. I got one. I'm reeling it in. Get the net out.
Right. In a year where there's not a Jenny Awful book, something has to stand in that space of little weird, unsettling novel. This year for me, it was those two.
I kind of wish another shared passion of ours is the New Yorker writer memoir.
Oh, yeah. We had three of them this year.
Yeah, I know, but none of them we're not recommending any of them because and we know why that is.
Yeah, there's
You gotta like sentences.
You gotta like sentences. And I have
like if you like sentences, I'm giving you Tad Friend. I'm giving you that if you like sentences.
And I have recommended
if you like vibes, I'm giving you Stay True.
Yeah. I have recommended the Tad Friend to one person in person that I know will get that, you know. It's juicy and
I've aspirationally and maybe recklessly recommended Solito to a few people, Javier Zamora, without maybe enough.
Well, because it worked on me. I downloaded it as you were talking about it the day that you had it in Front List Foyer. And I'm in the middle. I'm almost done, actually, with the new Kevin Wilson. Now is not the time to panic. And I think that that might end up being something that's widely recommendable. But it's weird in a way that I wish I had more opportunities to recommend also.
Right. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So in conclusion,
do people give celebrity memoirs? It's kind of an interesting year for celebrity memoirs, but this is not something I do typically.
No.
Because you shouted out the Math Perry to me, but that's kind of like the 90s by Klosterman in terms of interest for people.
Yeah, really, the only one that I was thinking about, I don't think it's a top five easy gift book. It's not like a Swiss Army, but if you had somebody in your life this year that got super excited about The Woman King, Viola Davis's memoir is wonderful.
Right. I know a lot of people like The Office BFFs. That's about The Office by the women who played Angela and Pam. I don't know their names. I'm sorry. Yeah. That book sold a ton. And I know people love that show. That's probably a good gift book if you have an Office fan of your life. In fact, if you have an Office, I mean, that now we're getting more specific, though a lot of people like The Office. See if Trinkle. Yeah, I think that's pretty much, my list.
Yeah, so just totally unloaded hardcover copies of I'm Glad My Mom Died for everybody. That's where we're going.
Merry Christmas, Mom.
It's a hang, that book.
Yeah, I'm gonna get there. I think that's a subject of a future episode. I guess.
All right.
Well, thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you.
As always, shoot us an email, podcast@bookriot.com. You can find show notes, bookriot.com/listen. And we're going to be back with a regularly scheduled programming, late Sunday, Monday night, yeah, as per usual. Go check out the Patreon. We're doing, I guess we can, this is a good place to shout it out. We are going to do the books we missed this year, mm-hmm, coming up in the future on the Patreon. So we both had really good reading years, a lot of stuff we liked. But as always, our TBOth doth extendeth our reach. And we're going to talk about the ones that we're sad we missed, maybe we'll get to, and maybe we should just finally close that tab because we're actually never going to make that soup recipe. And it's just time to let it go.
Yep.
Talk to you later.
Have a good one.